Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Icebreaker. Today, we're going to be talking about World Overshoot Day, which is a few days ago on July 29th. This wasn't really a planned episode, but after learning more about World Overshoot Day, I thought it'd be a relevant topic to discuss. So, let's first start off with, what is World Overshoot Day? It kind of sounds like a day for archery or hunting. Sorry to disappoint, but it's not. What? Anya's not doing an episode in archery? Aw, shucks. But don't worry, because World Overshoot Day is also pretty interesting. And a little bit frightening for a planet's future. But before we get into that, let's first answer the question of what World Overshoot Day actually is. World Overshoot Day is the estimated date when demand for Earth's ecological resources exceeds what the planet can regenerate. It is, in layman's terms, the date when humanity is projected to have used up all of the planet's biological resources regenerated in 1 year. The concept of Earth Overshoot Day was first conceived by Andrew Sims of the UK think tank New Economics Foundation, which partnered with the Global Footprint Network in 2006 to launch the first global Earth Overshoot Day campaign. The World Wildlife Fund, or WWF, the world's largest conservation organization, has participated in Earth Overshoot Day since 2007. As mentioned before, Earth's Overshoot Day is July 29th, but country overshoot days exist as well. For example, America's Overshoot Day is March 14th, Portugal's is May 13th, and Indonesia's is December 18th. So, as you can see, a country's overshoot day varies. Not all countries will even have an overshoot day. A country will only have an overshoot day if their ecological footprint per person is greater than the global biocapacity per person, which is 1.63 global hectares. More than 80% of people in the world today live in countries that demand more from nature than the ecosystem can regenerate. We know this because of the ecological footprint, which measures human demand or nature and can be compared to biocapacity, aka the productivity of a region's ecological assets. China has the largest total ecological footprint, making up nearly 24% of the world's total ecological footprint. However, China's footprint per person is only 3.6 global hectares. 1 hectare is 10,000 square meters, or approximately 2.47 acres. By comparison, the footprint per person of the United States is much larger at 8.6 global hectares. Brazil, meanwhile, has an ecological reserve thanks to its immense forests, like the Amazon, and a large biocapacity per person of nearly 8.9 global hectares. Brazil's footprint per person is 3 global hectares. Carbon emissions are the largest component of the ecological footprint. The footprint also includes consumption of food, timber, fiber such as cotton, and use of land for cities. Global Footprint Network calculates the footprint of more than 200 countries and regions from 1961 to the present day. I was still a little bit interested in how this overshoot day was actually calculated, so let's get into that. According to overshootday.org, the Global Footprint Network calculates the number of days that year that Earth's biocapacity suffices to provide for humanity's ecological footprint. The remainder of the year corresponds to global overshoot. Earth's overshoot day is computed by dividing the planet's biocapacity, again, the amount of ecological resources Earth is able to generate that year, by humanity's ecological footprint, or humanity's demand for that year, and multiplying it by 365, the number of days in a year. During a leap year, they use 366 instead. So, to sum it up, divide Earth's biocapacity by humanity's ecological footprint, multiply the entire thing by the number of days in that year. So for this year, 365. And that's how you get Earth Overshoot Day. So let's delve a little bit deeper into a nation's biocapacity and footprint per person. All of this information is coming from Earth Overshoot Day by the org, by the way, if you wanted to do your own research. Anyways, the Global Footprint Network measures a population's demand for and an ecosystem's supply of resources and services. These calculations serve as the foundation for calculating Earth Overshoot Day. On the supply side, a city, state, or nation's biocapacity represents its biologically productive land and sea area, including forest lands, grazing lands, cropland, fishing grounds, and built-up land. For example, as mentioned before, Brazil's ecological reserve, the Great Amazon Forest, would be included in this. On the demand side, the ecological footprint measures a population's demand for plant-based food and fiber products, livestock and fish products, timber and other forest products, space for urban infrastructure like city development, and forests to absorb its carbon dioxide emissions from fossil fuels. Both measures are expressed in global hectares, which are globally comparable standardized hectares with world average productivity. Each city, state, or nation's ecological footprint can be compared to its biocapacity. If a population's demand for ecological assets exceeds the supply, that region runs an ecological deficit. A region in ecological deficit meets demand by A, importing and liquidating its own ecological assets, such as overfishing, and or B, emitting carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. At the global level, ecological deficit and overshoot are the same since there is no net import of resources to the planet. Now that we've established the date and calculations, let's discuss why this is a problem. According to the Global Environment Outlook published by the United Nations in 2019 and greengrowing.org, if the world lived by like Americans, we humans would need at least 5 Earths to support the global population, meaning we have to act fast. If we don't make the changes necessary now to reduce our ecological footprint, not only will Earth see a global ecological disaster, but it will also create a global health emergency. Most notably, it could lead to millions of deaths from air pollution in Asia, the Middle East, and Africa. Pollution of freshwaters could also lead to antimicrobial-resistant infections, which are notoriously difficult to get under control. However, this is not a problem of science or technology, but rather one of implementation. Because we have the science and the technology and the money to fix the problem. So, let's talk about these solutions. Many monetary assessments of our life support system, or natural capital, as some call it, conclude it's not worth much. Currently, very little of the global GDP trickles back to those who manage and care for the planet. Farms, forests, parks, wetlands, lakes, and oceans all support life. Yet, they are also under enormous pressure. Without the life support system, nothing else is possible. Therefore, humanity's quality of life, survival even, is dependent on the health of our planet's biological resources, or web of life. Fertile soil, clean water, and clean air are necessary to provide humanity with the food and physical health we require to thrive. Vibrant natural ecosystems such as oceans and forests are indispensable to keep our planet livable. For example, by regulating the climate and absorbing carbon emissions, they also help keep humans psychologically and spiritually grounded. Given the massive overuse of the planet's biological resources, our economies now are limited by the availability of Earth's biocapacity. To ensure we have a healthy planet that can support us now and in the future, requires reducing human demand and maintaining our planet's life support system. The good news is, solutions already exist to boost the health of our ecosystems and, in turn, the planet's capacity to regenerate biological resources. So, this is done in 3 ways. A. Classical conservation. Or, efforts to protect and preserve wild spaces, particularly biodiversity hotspots. It's suggested that it would take half of the planet's biocapacity to secure about 85% of biodiversity. Many organizations have supported such conservation efforts, including World Wildlife Fund, who has worked on strengthening countries and regions' park systems, and other organizations who have secured conservation easements on private and public properties. B. Restoration. Many ecosystems have been overused and need to be restored. For example, forests converted to raise cattle in the province of Guanacaste in Costa Rica have led to land deterioration. With restoration, some of the land is now being reforested. Similar efforts have been made around the world, from China to Ethiopia. Reforestation of tropical forests and mangroves has the triple benefit of increasing biodiversity, sequestering carbon dioxide, and acting as flood barriers during hurricanes for coastal urban areas in the tropics and subtropics. And C, we have regenerative agriculture and sustainable fishing. To keep feeding humanity, we need to keep finding ways of farming that maintains soil productivity, groundwater levels, water cycles, and genetic diversity, while also avoiding contamination. Regeneration is becoming an international movement, and there are growing numbers of exciting examples. Sustainable fishing is another aspect. It supports overall ocean health and helps ensure that the ocean continues to provide for generations to come. In fact, approximately 3 billion people rely on seafood as their primary source of protein, especially in low-income countries. A healthy ocean also needs acidification to be slowed by controlling carbon emissions, since the ocean currently absorbs 30% of our carbon emissions. All of these solutions align with the UN's SDGs, or Sustainable Development Goals 14 and 15, which call to conserve and sustainably use marine resources and protect, restore, and promote the sustainable use of terrestrial ecosystems, respectively. To be sustainable, development ultimately must also fit within our planet's resource budget. To learn more about solutions, I highly recommend checking out overshootday.org, which is where I've gotten most of my information for this pretty verbatim, and going under solutions. Keep in mind that effective and affordable solutions already exist, meaning it is possible to accelerate their implementation in the real world. The transformation to a sustainable and carbon-neutral world is technologically possible. As always, I thank you for listening to this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to follow this podcast on Instagram at icebreaker.podcast and check out icebreakerpodcast.cord.co.